I love it.
Special guest.
Special guest.
We're recording right now. Oh, yeah. Welcome to episode 319.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com.
We're all in a room together.
Yeah, this is episode 319, by the way.
And I'm Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
Yeah, we're at PAX.
We are. We're in Seattle. It is the first real day of PAX West 2018. And we played a lot of games.
Yeah.
I was talking to Matt and I felt really good. My faith in video games has been restored after the games I played today. I think I played, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 things, and they were all pretty damn good. So I'm feeling pretty happy about PAX right now.
I'd agree. Yeah, we said it, I don't know if we said it on the podcast, but after East, East was a lot of fun, but we had like, it was like a friend con, essentially. We really did a lot of hanging out and saw everybody and we played some games, and some of them were surprised. They were like really fun, like some smaller indie titles, I remember. But we didn't walk away going like, "Man, video games!" You know, like we kind of just walked away going like, "All right, we go to a lot of these." Yeah. So
there weren't too many huge surprises at East this year, but
and I don't know that anything was a giant surprise today. We kind of played a lot of big stuff, but I think we all had fun.
That's I think the amazing thing is when you look at the games that we were actually got a chance to play today. We got to play a lot of big AAA titles, mm-hmm. which we normally don't get to do on a single day of PAX. So we played a ton of stuff.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do a quick like a rundown.
Yeah.
So people know what we're going to talk about on this episode. I think obviously we're going to talk about some weird indies that we played, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big games that we can talk about today are Division 2, mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Resident Evil 2, mm-hmm. the remake. What about you, Matt? Big games, Forza Horizon 4,
Starlink
Battle for Atlas,
Darksiders 3.
So those will be the big games, and then of course all the weird stuff that we found
mm-hmm.
on the show floor, indies and fun stuff like that, surprises, and we did a panel today as well.
Yeah. So we did the orientation panel. Or How to PAX panel, and it was a lot of fun. We've done the panel before, but I feel like this one had a lot more energy than we've had in the past, and it all flowed really well. It was a lot of fun. We recorded some audio for that, so hopefully it turned out. We'll release that into our feed so you guys can hear it, but we had just a ton of fun people and really great questions from the audience, and left with a very warm, fuzzy feeling in my guts.
I think people actually made friends with one another at this convention.
I truly hope so. I really do. It's sort of the whole goal is, you know, to kind of point people in the right direction and have them make lifelong friends so that they can have the sort of the awesome feeling of coming back to these events and seeing familiar faces.
Well, that's the thing, is that you had people introduce themselves to someone they didn't know. Some of them actually came up and introduced the other person.
Yeah.
And so even if those people don't become friends, now they'll have at least one familiar face next time they go to PAX. They go, "Hey, I met you at the thing last year."
Right.
Like, cool.
Yeah.
Which is exactly why we do it.
And if that panel brought you to this podcast, I would just like to say, I think we all agree, but we really love meeting everybody as well, and we're really happy everybody had a good time. We got some very nice people that came up afterwards, said they had a good time, and that it's so helpful to kind of have that at the beginning of PAX, and I think that's really awesome, so hopefully you're enjoying the rest of the convention, you know?
Yeah. It was great. It was great meeting a lot of people, and very warm and fuzzy vibes, like I said before. Let's talk about some games.
Cool. Let's do it.
You want to start, Scott?
Yeah, let's start with the Division 2.
Sure.
Cool.
I think for some people, you may have seen some of the game footage. Obviously, the sort of the biggest visual differences is that the game is in Washington, D.C., and it's in the summertime.
Yeah.
So, like, when Matt walked by, he said to me, he's like, "It looks much brighter now than it did before."
Yeah.
Because the previous game was set in New York in the winter, had, like, a very kind of, like, drab look to it. But this one's more, looks like it's more outdoorsy.
Very cool.
More wide open. And I think because of that, it kind of reminds me of what The Last of Us looked like when that came out, because it was so much brighter than anything else at the time.
I could see that.
But mechanically, the things that are different is that each character has their own special weapon. There are four different types of characters that you can play as. So you still have your traditional loadout with, like, two firearms and a sidearm. Now each character has a special weapon, which is one has, like, explosive crossbow bolts.
Mm-hmm.
One had a grenade launcher.
Mm-hmm.
One had...
sniper, like a hyper sniper rifle, essentially.
Sniper rifle, and then I think there may have been another.
There was a
fourth one. I didn't
play. No, there was two sharpshooters, demolitions, and a...
Yeah, I don't remember what the fourth special weapon was, the character, but either way.
No, I don't... I think they had two of the mega sniper rifles.
Gotcha.
The crossbow and then the grenade launcher, whatever you said it was.
And then some new abilities that we were able to try out. There was they brought back the drone as like a special ability for a specific character.
Oh, cool.
So you could like call out the drone and sick it on different enemies.
Yeah.
There was some cool like AoE effects that you could throw out into the field. I used one called Hive, which looks like it threw out a bunch of like micro swarm robots that like when the enemy entered the area it would like chase them around and kind of distract them so you could attack them. And all that stuff is important because the characters, the enemies in this game are much smarter than the previous game.
Okay.
They seem to react more to what you're doing. They try to flank you faster. And there's more kind of like interplay with them as you're attacking them. So
are there guys with flamethrower tanks that have the best explosion?
Yeah,
animation?
We did not see those guys. Yeah, we got, but they
added... did have some grenade packs that we blew up on the backs of dudes.
Yeah, they still have the like the hot spots, and there was a super armored enemy that came out that we had to like whittle down his armor before we could even attack him. But all that stuff adds up to kind of like a more tactical experience, and you really need to work together a little harder. I think we got to play the same mission that was like in the demo that you saw like at E3. We got to play that mission
outside of a ship or something.
One where it's like you run onto like Air Force One outside of the
White House. Yeah, it wasn't a ship, it was a plane. You're right.
Yeah, yeah, it was like that kind of mission with a couple of waves of enemies, but still pretty cool. It feels the same, but also different.
Yeah, it felt very similar play wise, but looks nicer to a degree. I mean, it's not like. You know, whole life cycle jumps in gaming, but it looks a lot nicer. The brightness I actually thought was way more fun.
Yes.
And way less, like, dingy and dark.
Yeah.
It
wears on you after a while.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, there are 100 hours of playing that game, you're sludging through the snow.
Yeah. It felt a little less, and this might have just been the map we played or where we were playing in the map. It felt a little less, until we were in front of the White House, it felt a little less, like, identifiable as a city.
Yeah.
Like, it just kind of felt
we
like
started
a,
in a weird place.
Like, you were just like, you're in a place with a thing, and you're like, okay. Like, it could have been any place in the country.
Right.
So that, like, it may have lost a little bit of that. You know, like, I don't know, there's certain games, like, the First Division in New York, the Boston Fallout. Like, there are certain games that just, like, nailed a city so well that it just felt like that city while you were walking around it. And this maybe lost a little of that, but it otherwise played really smoothly. I did the sniper, which was fun, really fun. I don't remember sniping a lot in the first one.
It was hard to snipe in the first one because some of the environments were more like it was like close quarters fighting.
Yeah.
So as a sniper, you really didn't have much of an advantage in that.
But this time, you could sit. I was sitting like way back for some of it and just like picking people off.
And it was more punishing to run up close because I don't think the gear we had was very good.
And then we apparently tore through it so fast that they were like, do you just want to go again?
Yeah,
we were like, all right.
It was like a 20-minute demo.
That's awesome.
They're like, you guys have 7 minutes left. You want to restart the server? And we're like, yeah, let's go.
That's
so
awesome.
We jumped back. We all switched characters and jumped back in.
Yeah.
And it was super fun, but I enjoyed it.
Overall impressions positive.
Yeah, I'll pick
it. I feel good about it. It's just, you know, the games like that. It's like the game systems that make or break stuff like that.
Right.
Like the game modes and like how the loot systems work and like maximizing gear and stuff like that. And
right.
To the extent that that's fun or not for you, then that's...
It did feel a little, because you could kind of switch up gear as you picked up loot out in the field, but that wasn't in Division 1.
Yeah,
right?
You could kind of do that a little bit.
This was like immediate, and it was just so frenetic that I like didn't really have time to be like, oh, well, what's this back? But like, stuff's just moving around you, so.
Mm-hmm. A lot of numbers.
Thought it was good, but yeah, I'll probably be picking it up. I don't see why I wouldn't.
Cool.
Let's talk, let's stick with Ubisoft and talk Starlink Battle for Atlas.
Sure.
Okay.
Because we all played this.
Yeah.
My first impressions was I was not great at this game, but I got better as we progressed. So for those that don't know about Starlink Battle for Atlas, it's the new, you turn toys into game, like basically toys are the game peripherals, which you can like customize. They're all modular, so there's spaceships, You can add wings and guns and swap them out. They're actual physical items.
Pilots, yeah.
And pilots. So you buy different pilots, you buy different ships and different guns. You can actually add them to the physical model. You strap the model into the like a special dock that attaches to the controller, and then it's represented in real time in the game, which is a very expensive way to do DLC. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the models are pretty solid. I felt like they were cool to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'd put them on a shelf.
Yeah. They're cool to look at. I mean, they're, you know, I think being able to kind of modify them on the fly was really cool. Being able to, you know, swap out your guns or swap out your wings.
You can't swap out your pilot, though, right?
I don't think you can swap out your pilot.
Like, I think the main ship, unless it blows up, and your pilot, you can't swap out.
They told me you could swap ships.
You can swap ships?
In the middle of the battle.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing that made it interesting is, I think the demo that we were handed was, like, way deeper into the game. Because, like you said, all the different components each were their own physical attributes of the ship, but then each of those components had, like, a skill tree in the menu that, like, given the time frame of the demo, like,
yeah,
you really just had to go in there and pick something, or you didn't pick anything at all, and a lot of those slots had, like, had empty spaces in them,
yeah,
where we weren't assigning, like, additional, like, modifiers. So I think it's a game where when you start, it would probably start you at zero and be like, here's your ship and here's your weapons.
Right.
And then they would start dropping those modifiers on you and like...
Yeah. Because
everything physical has an upgrade tree.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it kind of gets into like the deeper nuts and bolts. And we were just kind of flailing with like just trying out different weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My smallest of opinions, it has nothing to do with this game and it has everything to do with different consoles, that if they could just agree on where buttons are...
Oh, so obnoxious,
oh
wasn't
God.
It?
Oh, my God. Because I have to, like, every time I play the Switch, I have to remap my brain as to where AB, like, because the buttons
they're
are,
swapped.
Like, they're swapped.
Yeah, yeah. Why are they swapped?
I don't know. And then I got on there, and I started playing, and like, it kept, like, you know, B to get out of the way, and A to recharge, and I kept pounding the wrong one every time, and I was like, I'd have to, like, look down at
yeah,
the controller,
yeah,
and
the
I'm like,
thing.
Oh, my God, I'm losing my mind. I thought the game, we played on Switch. I don't entirely understand how it's going to work with Xbox unless it's some weird peripheral that attaches
yeah.
to the controller.
We were talking about that too.
Yeah.
So for the Switch, it basically gives you a new
like a Joy-Con
controller that lets you like snap your Joy-Cons on the side, and then it has, you know, like the thing, the mechanic to put the pilot in and get the ship attached and all that on the top. It wasn't too uncomfortable for me. I thought it controlled pretty well, other than the button thing. But the actual ship flying was like, it was hard.
It was really hard.
Significantly more difficult than I expected, like, StarCraftian mechanics, not just because of the time with StarCraft, but, or not StarCraft.
Star Fox.
Yeah. But, man, real kind of like noodly and like,
it was all over the
super
place.
Sensitive at some points and then not sensitive at other points when you were like trying to get out of the way of something. I switched out weapons because Scott told me to, and the switch out was good. It was a very good like OP combo essentially, but switching out weapons, everything felt significantly different when you swapped stuff out. It did not feel like the same thing anymore.
Yeah.
And I should have switched out ships because it would have been interesting going from the tank to one of the light ones, because I think you guys both did light ships.
I think so too.
I used the R-Wing.
Yeah. Did you? I thought about it, and then I was like, oh, I'll try one of the tanks or whatever. And I purposely chose a different pilot so we could see a different special and stuff. But it all felt different. It all looked really good. But we'll see. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, there's some interesting mechanics. Like, you can actually fly around the solar system and land on planets, which is cool. And the thing that kind of was jarring for me is it switches from flight to, like, hover platformy mode.
Yes.
Where you're like strafing like first-person shooter. Third-person
yeah,
shooter
like,
strafing.
Yeah, it becomes a third-person shooter and you're like jumping over you know, environmental attacks and kind of strafing around. And it kind of, to me, took it out. I was like, I don't want to play a plane that's on the ground. It's just me personally. But, you know, I left very positive feelings about it. I think it could be really cool. I don't know if I'm in a place where I'm going to collect a bunch of different little plasticky spaceships.
That's my main concern with the game, is that, like, as an adult, I think I genuinely am interested in this game.
Yeah.
But I feel like I won't be able to afford more than just the base set, and I don't know that I would go buy the other parts to have them. And so, like, my question for this game is like what is offered to you if all you have is just the starter set.
Right.
Yeah.
Because at one point we both died, and it was like, you have 4 ships remaining, like, attach another ship to get started, and we were like, oh. And so in the back of my mind, it makes you think, like, well, what happens if I only have 1 ship and it crashes? Like, is that the end of the game, or is there something else?
Yeah.
The subtle point there, though, guys, is that I outgamed Ash and Scott.
Oh, yeah, you were fantastic.
Both times
today.
You took no damage.
It was pretty crazy. So that was Starlink Battle for Atlas, coming out in October from Ubisoft on all platforms.
Yeah.
Except for, I don't think it's coming out from PC, but all consoles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played Forza Horizon 4.
Yeah, you did.
And, you know, gold starred the crap out of that thing, won all 4 seasons.
That's your baby. That game's your baby.
It's just such a comfortable game to play. It really is just relaxing to me. It's like I'm basically sitting down at like a Beyonce concert driving a supercar around like something. Like it's just nice. I don't know. It's fun. The demo actually was a really good demo. They ran you through 4 seasons essentially and swapped you out of 4 different kinds of cars. So you started out with 3 different kinds of cars. You started out in a McLaren. And you're just kind of hauling ass down British countryside. And it's awesome. It looks great. And then you switch into, I think, a truck in the snow. And then it switches again into a rally car going down the mountains. And it really was just fun and, like, looked great and played super smoothly. The seasons all felt really different. And I'm sure it won't be as jarring as just, like, sliding you into them, essentially, in the actual game itself. There's still daytime, nighttime, right? All that stuff is still coming back. But it was super fun, super easy to play, and I'm happy it's coming out in like 3 weeks because I
crazy.
Just want to play it.
Fall is upon us, guys.
Indeed.
There's so many games.
For sure.
Endless games. What about you, Scott? Anything?
I played Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
I'm curious. So you were a little bit apprehensive.
Yeah, and I think I still might be.
Okay.
Yeah. So the demo that they had at PAX, the gentleman at the booth was like, you can either do ship combat, like, in the same way. He's like, did you play Black Flag? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, so we have something like that, like a naval battle. And he's like, or you could try one of, like, the 100-character battles, you know, like the big, like...
War, essentially.
War battles. So I picked that one because I was more interested in the combat. And so it was this, like, red versus blue battle on the beach. And they gave you a bunch of abilities, which really kind of turned the tide. And so the gist of this was, like, it was almost like For Honor.
Okay.
Right? Where, like, both of the teams had, like, health bars at the top. And so you basically had to kill, like, captains and generals to kind of, like, whittle down the enemy's bar. And then that would ultimately spawn, like, a boss that you could use that would then deal, like, massive damage to, like, that side's health.
Okay.
And so you could pretty much charge into battle, cutting down, like, minor enemies, like captains and stuff like that. It just felt a little weird because so much of Assassin's Creed, like, yes, in the past you could get into, like, all-out brawls, but that was never really... It was more always, like, a sort of, like, a one-on-one kind of experience to do combat. And so this one kind of felt, like, a little frantic. And what I ended up doing is that they already outfitted the character with 4 special abilities, and one of them was, like, the Spartan kick.
Yeah.
So anytime I would find a captain, I would just run into the battle to the captain, Spartan kick him, like, out of the mob, and then kind of, like, isolate.
Oh, okay.
And fight him, like, one-on-one, because, like, all the ads would just chase you anyways. But I played as, what's the female protagonist's name? It's, like, it starts with a K.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so I played as the female character. She had 4 abilities. I think they're the same for both, but she had, like, a Spartan kick, an ability that would, like, do, like, a quick heal, an ability that would, it was, like, a sync maneuver where, like, she would, like, lock onto an enemy and rip their shield away and then kind of, like, do some damage to them, and then they would become defenseless so you could attack them.
Yeah.
And then one that felt like it was kind of, like, an AoE kind of, like, pushback kind of maneuver. But the combat feels the same as the previous game, just on a larger scale. I was able to, like, again, all the Ubisoft demos were, like, timed, not necessarily cut to, like, a specific, like, demo length.
Yeah.
So, like, I concluded the battle, and nobody was standing around me, and so I just, like, kept playing. And then I did some of the stuff that you would do in the old game. I ran into, like, a camp and, like, eliminated the leader and looted the camp and then, like, ran into a different camp and fought some enemies, and there were ships in the harbor.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, it felt like the previous game. It felt like Origins.
Okay.
So, I don't really know. I know there's, like, a lot of new stuff with, like, the dialogue trees and romance options and all this other stuff. I didn't get to see it. So I don't know. I'm just kind of curious about, like, what makes this game an Assassin's Creed game? Like, what makes it tie into that storyline?
Right.
So, I mean...
Gonna have to play and see.
Mechanically, the game felt familiar, but I'm still kind of curious about what it's really all about.
So it's such a cool period in history, though, that it, I'm interested to see kind of what spin they take on it, so...
Yeah. More questions than answers, unfortunately. I still...
Oh, probably. I mean, no one really understands the narrative of that series, let's be
Scott
honest.
Does.
No.
But I'm saying, like, the actual, like, the tie-in to, like, in what, you know, is it going to feel like the previous game? Is
right.
It gonna, you know, is it still going to feel like Assassin's Creed?
Right.
That kind of thing.
I played a game called Blackout Club, which is from some of the developers of Bioshock spun off and created their own studio.
Oh, cool.
And this was actually the first appointment I booked, and I booked it such a long time ago that I forgot that I booked it.
Wow.
And then I got a text message, like, 5 minutes before the appointment, and I was like, oh... Yeah. I better go. So, Blackout Club, this is going to be a hard one to talk about because it's so very unique, but the game starts off and you are a girl inside of a house. And it felt very Gone Home for me at first. I'm exploring the house. It's very, very dark inside. I'm answering text messages from family members. Basically just exploring. And the way it felt... very off-putting, just the way that the light looked and the way that everything sounded and felt and the way that the game moved, it felt honestly very, very dreamlike.
Huh.
In the sort of way, and I was kind of talking to the developers about this too, in the sort of way that, you know, when you're in a dream and, like, you don't function quite right, like your hearing's a little weird,
yeah.
Or you're, like, half blind, or you just, like, move with, like, one slow foot.
Right.
Or we even talked about this, the developer and I, like, when you fly in dreams, but you fly super slow, like an idiot. I don't know if that ever
yeah.
happens to you. So there's something very off-putting about just the movement and the way that it felt. So it felt like a dream. And then the main character starts talking, and I'm like, oh, that's a really familiar voice. It turns out Ashley Birch is, like, one of the main voices.
Oh, cool.
Eventually what ends up happening is you get this message to close your eyes, and when you close your eyelids by pressing Y, you see the world a little bit differently, and you start to see things, like you're looking at picture frames and you see, like, a figure behind the picture
oh.
frame. And then you start to, like, move around the house with, like, your eyes closed, and you start to do kind of puzzly things, and eventually what ends up happening is you end up waking up.
Okay.
So the whole time you were in this kind of ethereal, dreamlike state, it turns out it really just was a dream. And now you are in the real world walking around. But you kind of brought some phantom-like specter back with you.
Mm, interesting.
And you have to hide and escape from this phantom-like specter in the real world. And the hiding mechanic was really cool. You can, like, close your eyes and you can see him through walls throughout the house. And you can kind of hear him, too. And... it gave you a prompt, like, go hide in the bathroom. He's looking for you. So you'll see him, like, four rooms away, like, you know, just this shade. Everything
oh, wow.
goes black except for the shade, and he's, like, looking for you. And you can hide from him. Eventually you make your way out of the house. And that's the introduction to the game. So it's sort of a game of hide-and-go-seek. There's so many layers to this. Then the game becomes a multiplayer game.
Oh. Okay.
So the intro, the first person experience, was just to kind of teach you about the world and teach you the mechanics of the game. Then the multiplayer game is you play a group of kids who are collecting evidence about these dark things that are going on in the town. And the kids are all customizable. They're all voiced by different people. You get different clothes for them. And you go on these quests together as a group of kids to go into these houses and collect evidence and do things in these neighborhoods. And there's all sorts of, like, creepy crawlies around that you have to, like, run and hide from. It's not based on combat. It's based on, like, accomplishing a task inside this creepy house and working together
without
to do it.
Caught.
Without getting caught, right? And you start to do, like, bad things, like stealing or taking pictures or what have you. And whoever has, like, the highest, like, who did the most bad things to the enemies, the shade will start coming after them and you'll have to protect their friends. And it was watching the gameplay was super cool because he was like trying to get into this basement. He had this, you can find tools along the way, like grappling hooks and black hats and things like that to distract some enemies that pop up. It felt really strategic and really different. And I love the fact that the protagonists of this game, this multiplayer game, were all kids, and they're all like, you know, 10, 12 years old.
Because you're not like all powerful.
Right. And it's also not a, it's not a multiplayer game where you're, you know, killing. It's more about surviving and accomplishing tasks and using each other's wits to kind of use stealth with one another to accomplish these tasks, which I thought was really kind of innovative and different.
Yeah,
but,
really
cool. You know, I was really impressed by it. It was very unique and different. It's called Blackout Club. I don't believe they have a really set ETA just yet. I probably butchered what the overall narrative is about because there was a lot. There's a lot of different layers to it. But keep your eyes peeled for this one. I think it's pretty special and pretty different, and it would, I think, lend itself very well to a multiplayer experience.
Cool.
I played a game called The Messenger, which is by a group called Sabotage, and Devolver's putting it out. Messenger is really kind of crazy. It's sort of a old-school Ninja Gaiden-esque game where you're playing in this kind of 8-bit world as this messenger ninja who's, you know, after a demon attacks, you've been given the instruction to take this scroll to the village or whatever, to four elder shamans or something like that. So it starts out very kind of normal, and you're like, oh, it's 8-bit with, like, chiptune music, and it looks great for an 8-bit game, and it sounds really good. It's got a really great sense of humor, so I was telling Ash a few of these things, but while you're playing it, it was like, I played a demo mode, and in the demo, they were making, like, fourth wall jokes about it being a demo, and, like, they're like, hey, we're just going to give you all the gear now. You would normally attain this through a very balanced system while you played the game.
Nice.
They're like, but we want you to see how it plays, you know, like, but it was like, that was from the shopkeeper, like, he was the one saying that, you know, to me, and it was done very well. All of the jokes were very subtle and good. But the two really kind of awesome mechanics in this were, while you're playing, you can time travel. And you don't do it by choice. You pass through these gates. And they've made a joke about that, too, about how, like, trust us, this seems like a gimmick, but it's actually very tightly into the narrative. But it's like an in-game character says that to you.
Yeah,
it's like, great. In their voice and everything. But when you pass through when you go to time travel and you pass through a gate, the whole game shifts to 16-bit, like, immediately. And the music gets, like, upgraded and starts sounding like 16-bit music from, like, old Genesis days.
It's awesome.
And the whole look and feel, like, it just swaps out immediately. It looks amazing. It looks really good, actually. And it's kind of, like, so weird between the 8-bit and the 16-bit. And every time you travel back and forth, you switch between these two looks, and it alters the map. So as you're running, you'll pass through a gate, and the whole map will shift, and you can, like, get to different parts and pass through a different gate,
so cool.
The map will shift back. Super fun. I had a really good time. The controls were really great. Everything played really well. It was super funny. Another fun little gimmick, or not gimmick, but mechanic they had was you go into the water, and you're, like, swimming, and when you hit the water, the music sounds like it goes under. Well, like, everything shifts on the audio
muffled
to sound like it's underwater, like, with you and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just little tiny things that are, like, attention to detail that they did that were really fun and ended up being really funny. Lots of special moves, lots of special, like, weapons. They had, like, a rope hook that you could, like, you know, travel through different spaces with, claws to climb walls, and all these different little things that you would get. And the enemies, as I played through it, got harder and harder. But it was really fun. It was a good demo, too. It was about 20 minutes long.
What is it available on?
Steam, I think. I don't know if it's going to be on console, but I know it's on Steam for a fact.
I think it's probably coming to Switch, if I remember correctly.
It might be.
What was it called?
The Messenger.
Messenger.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's coming out, I think, soon. I think, end of the month on Switch and Steam.
Cool. Very I cool. wanted to quickly mention a game called Astro Glaster. Did you see it? It was in the Indie Mega Booth.
I did not see it.
You would probably appreciate this. So there is a real-life character named Simon Forman. I guess he was... So the setting is Shakespeare's London, 1592.
Okay.
And apparently this guy fancied himself as a doctor, a medical doctor. But by trade, he was an astrologer.
Okay.
Astrologist. And so people would come to him for... I guess, different kinds of advice. and he would turn to astrology to treat their illnesses or give them,
oh,
like,
boy.
Give them financial
information.
Gotta love
early medicine.
Yeah. And so she, and what was funny about it is that the developer described the premise of the game to me, which was hilarious. And then she goes, what if I told you all of this was real? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, all this stuff really happened. So she was telling me that, like, she was telling me that this guy actually existed. He wanted to become a medical doctor. Like, the medical community thought he was full of it. But he kept extensive records of all of his patient interactions. And so the university that he, I guess, was trying to get his medical license through now has his medical records and is kind of, like, combing through them to learn about, like, what they knew about medicine back then. But the whole purpose of the game, it's a narrative kind of, like, dialogue-based game. And it's fully voiced, which is cool. But basically, people come to you with problems. You pick, like, sort of an astrology thing to read back to them. And the whole point of the game is for you to string them along long enough for them to be happy to write you a letter of referral so that you can get your medical license. So, like, in sort of a true-to-life historical
thing. I love it.
Thing.
I love the quirky stuff you can find in the Mega Booth like that. That's just so out there.
And so the demo, it was, like, a long demo, but you met with some characters multiple times, and they're like, oh, I can't believe you told me this was going to happen. It turned out this happened instead, but, like, I still want to hear your advice.
So good.
So anyways, that game is called Astrologaster. Astrological. So anyways, it's going to be it's on Steam, and it's on it's going to be on iOS, and you can wish list the game on Steam right now.
Cool. That sounds very unique.
Yeah, very quirky for sure.
I like it. Want me to do one?
Sure.
I played Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, which
I remember the original.
Rebel Galaxy is out, I think, on all systems now. It was a procedurally generated kind of space adventure game where you pilot a capital ship in sort of a space Wild West and go on adventures and do missions. And it being procedurally generated, you never really knew what was going to happen. But I liked it quite a bit. It had this cool Firefly vibe to it. I felt like it was really pretty to look at, and I actually played quite a bit of the original. I'm happy to say that Rebel Galaxy 2, Outlaw, the sequel, looks so much better, and just like the amount of detail and the amount of effort they put into this is just crazy. The original game was developed by 2 people. This is developed by 6, which still seems so tiny for the AAA polish that this game has. Overall, it is a space exploration game and space combat game with both third person and first person views. Currently, there are 6 different ships in this game. Each one has different cockpits and layouts, and it's totally customizable. They created a whole new system that looks just like Adobe Photoshop, so you can go in and actually customize your ships with different paint jobs. If you want to get in there and do it by hand, there's different brushes and different blenders and all sorts of stuff. Or if you want to import different PNGs, you can do that for your ship as well.
Wow.
You can also export your ship to a 3D printing company that's built into the game and print out a hard copy of your ship that you have customized.
That's insane.
Which is crazy. He showed me pictures of some of the ones that he had 3D printed back at home, which is super cool. This time around, so originally you piloted a giant capital ship, and they went the smaller route, and so now you pilot a fighter craft. So everything's a lot faster. Also this time there is an overall narrative, and it is all voiced, and you play as a protagonist. The other main protagonist in the last game was like an unvoiced sort of old-fashioned voiceless protagonist. This is a voiced female protagonist in her 40s who was a side character in the first game and who is now the main character in this game. She's kind of this salty, older pirate-type lady.
Cool.
And along the way, you can actually encounter other pilots that will join you on your adventures. They don't have any sort of permadeath or anything, so you can bring them with you and they can die, and you can actually help them complete their own quests. He showed off sort of a spaceport, and there's all sorts of stuff to do in the spaceport. There's like drinking games. There's actual like a working pool mini game.
Oh my gosh.
There's working arcade cabinets that you can go and play as your avatar. You can bet on all of these to make money.
Wow.
You can do smuggling runs. He said they're thinking of incorporating like a Cannonball Run where you actually bring like you're trying to smuggle like alcohol from like one port to another and all these police ships come after you.
Wow.
And so you're trying to outrun the police.
It's a monkey.
Yeah, right. Any which way but loose style. Yeah, everything about this got me so incredibly hyped. He said that they licensed like over 100 songs for a variety of different radio stations that you can listen to, so GTA style. It's like, it looks so gorgeous. He went and attacked like a capital ship and kind of wanted to show off some of the in-cockpit damage. So he kind of flew up to the capital ship and all of a sudden the cockpit started getting cracks in it. And he went in and quickly like modulated his shields, moved his shields up front, and then like quickly flipped around and like then, you know, started taking off to fly away from the capital ship and switched some of the power to his rear thrusters. You know, all doing this with the 360 controller.
That's crazy.
It was really just like fantastic, and you know, I was really blown away by what I saw. I can't believe a team of six people made this game. Like when you guys see it in action, it's nuts. It's like totally nuts looking how pretty it is.
Sounds crazy.
And this time, it's not procedurally generated. There is a full universe that these guys are building.
Wow.
Each one of the different solar systems is, or I guess solar systems? Yeah. Each one of the different solar systems is based on states of the United States. So it's supposed to be Wild West. So
oh my gosh.
There's like California, and then there's Florida, and they're kind of basing some of the traits of those actual places on the states.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so if you go to like, I was like, yeah, I'm from Florida. He's like, yeah, Florida's probably going to be pretty crazy. I'm like, yeah, Florida's going to be crazy. So anyway, that's Rebel Galaxy Outlaw. Right now, this is sitting at pretty close to my game of show thus far.
Wow.
And it's only day one, but I love, love, love this. It has a lot of roots in Privateer and Wing Commander. It has a lot of soul, and I think this has the potential to be a very big sleeper hit.
Nice.
Yeah.
So over at the
ID.
Yeah, in the Microsoft Xbox booth, they have a little ID at Xbox section. I played a game earlier called Supermarket Shriek, and then I pulled Matt over, and Matt played it, and I will let you explain.
The concept of the game is that you are either an old man or a goat, and you're in a shopping cart, and you both yell, and that's how it propels the shopping cart forward. But the goat's on the right, the old man's on the left, so you only control going right or left, and it's two-player like co-op. So you use... You can actually, we were looking it up because we both thought this was most likely true, which it is. Yeah. You can use a microphone and just scream into the microphone, and depending on how loud you scream into the microphone, it'll like power up how hard you turn right or left. We were using the triggers on the thing, so the entire control for the game was me using the right trigger on the Xbox controller, and the guy I was playing with using the left trigger on the Xbox controller.
Okay.
And you are attempting to race a shopping cart through a grocery store, essentially.
Yeah, different levels.
Different levels or different grocery stores.
Yeah, all the levels are different like types of grocery stores.
This game was bonkers and awesome.
I love it.
Special guest.
We're recording right now.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to episode 319. We really are recording.
Yeah.
So you're welcome to just kind of hang out and be a part with us.
It was a lot of me very overwhelmingly staring around and wondering.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we still do. Yeah. After many of these, there's a whole lot going on.
Well, it's like I got there 2:30, all the lines were capped, and
it's hard. Like, it's really weird. It's hard to find a way to play the stuff that you really want to play. Like, you'll see a game, you're like, oh, I really want to play that Ubisoft stuff, but it's like, how do I actually go about doing that?
Yeah.
Either have to go really early or just decide to not care about it.
Yeah.
Welcome to PAX.
Thank you.
So Matt and I played Resident Evil 2.
We didn't even...
Day, introduce yourself. I'm sorry. We really are recording right now.
I'm Day. Voice of Kate Marsh from Life is Strange.
And our reluctant roommate.
No, not true at all. Very, very grateful and appreciative roommate.
Yeah.
I rephrase that.
Oh my gosh.
We'll try. We're terrible snorers, so
it's fine.
You can smother us.
Okay. It's
going to be eventually.
No, okay. I'm not a light sleeper. We're good.
Okay. Yeah, you'll need headphones. So, welcome, by the way. Yeah. you can record with us all weekend. We just do this randomly.
Right. Love it.
Awesome. So, Matt and I this morning during media hour, we went and played Resident Evil 2, the remake of Resident Evil.
Yeah.
I'll say this, I'm a lifelong fan of the series, so that's why I went there first. I think it's really weird that they devoted so many resources to remaking this old game from like 2001 or something.
But it looks amazing.
It's fantastic, like, now, yeah. Right?
It looks like a current, it looks and plays
right.
Completely current gen. It doesn't look like they just slapped a coat of paint on it.
I think it's built from the ground up. I don't think there's any assets at all from the original game. So it kind of thrusts you maybe like an hour into the narrative. You're playing as Leon again. You're in the Raccoon City Police Department. You're kind of wandering around discovering clues about what's going on. It's super scary. I mean, they did such a great job with the lighting. I think it's using like the new Unreal Engine, so it's like the lighting is just like crazy dark.
Yeah.
And you can use like a little tiny light on your gun and kind of like there's a section where you lift up this gate and you crawl under and everything's flooded and it's pitch black and you can hear like the water dripping and you can hear just like all and the sound design is brilliant and you can hear just all this weird, you know, stuff going on in the background and you're shining your flashlight down this dark corridor and it's just you can't help but be legitimately scared.
Oh yeah. Like I walked down the hall and got to where like the bathrooms were and like music started kicking in with the sound. And, like, you can hear Leon breathing, too, the whole time, which is always creepy. And I realized I was, like, iron gripping the controller. My hand was, like, white and, like, hurting because I was gripping the controller so hard. I did not outplay you in this game. The very first zombie that I ran into killed me.
The
way they were doing the demo is when you die, the demo's over. Wow. So I literally like spent 20 minutes trying to find this door to like make my way to the other part. And I like run into the first zombie and I'm like, headshot, cool, I'm done. And then the zombie kept coming and I was like, headshot, cool, I'm done. And then he kept coming and they grappled me and I was like, oh, I'll grapple. And I started like pounding on buttons.
Didn't do it fast.
No grappling. They didn't even give me the option. Wow, didn't even say anything. It just ate me immediately and I was dead. And it was like, thanks for playing. And I was like, what the fuck?
So brutal. Yeah, I fared a little bit better. I did get bitten, but I didn't die. Yeah, I mean, they did a great job. One of the things about Resident Evil, that the originals that made it so fantastic before it went shooter crazy, was you had to really worry about ammo conservation. I think, like, during the demo, you had, like, 12 or 16 rounds in your handgun. So, you know, I saw a couple zombies, and I'm like, well, do I just try to avoid these, or do I actually waste ammunition on them? So you're kind of doing this balancing act as you play the game. I made it to the end of the demo. I cannot wait to dive in there and explore, you know,
like the game that you wanted it to be? Did it still feel like Resident Evil?
Well, it's funny, because my headcanon of what this game was when I first played it in 2001, in my head, it looks really good.
It looks exactly the same.
It does, but then if you look back at the screenshots from it from 2001, it looks like total ass.
Yeah.
So, it is beautiful now, and now I'm, you know, one thing I said to Matt is, like, it's weird that they would spend so much money and time remaking this older title instead of expanding the universe, right? Mm-hmm. They're kind of remaking these old games.
Yeah, but I guess that's what people want, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, it is, I guess, a classic at this point. But anyway, it was really, really solid, better than I thought it was going to be, and I'm amped to see what happens if they keep making more.
Awesome.
Yeah. Is that it for this episode?
We didn't talk about Lightfingers.
Let's do Lightfingers.
Lightfingers.
Or we can save Lightfingers for tomorrow.
Either way.
Because I have a couple indies I can save for tomorrow, too.
Oh, we'll save it for tomorrow, then.
Sure.
That'll be our big tease
for the next episode. Lightfingers tomorrow.
Yeah. Have you guys played Tomb Raider yet?
No.
I haven't played the new one. Did you?
Why don't you tell us
about Tomb Raider? Yeah.
I played it actually at their release event in L.A.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The Square Enix.
Very nice.
All right.
Yes. How
Love
is it?
Those guys. They're great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's Tomb Raider, and she's the best.
Yeah.
And it's more of the same, which is, like, but not in a bad way. It's like, you're back in Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Like, the first two. I'm... St- still only halfway through the second.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah,
that's where I am. Too.
Halfway through a Russian camp, and I was like, I haven't picked it back up to finish it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just
this is Shadow of the Tomb Raider, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it was Rise.
Yeah.
It's Mayan culture.
Oh, cool.
And,
okay. I love that
stuff. So it's really fun. I think it was about 15-minute gameplay, but yeah, it's.
I love what they did. They made her, like, I grew up with that character, but now the way that she, like, whoever played her did such a great job. They did mocap and everything for her.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's such a great performance, and that character is, like, so likable just as, like, a badass protagonist. I mean, she was kind of cartoony before in the originals, but now it's, like, Lara Croft is just, like, such an iconic cool. You said you just watched the movie too, right?
I did on the plane here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exciting.
I have not seen it, but like I was curious, how did you like the movie?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I was telling you they changed things that I was a little like, well, that was weird. And like, where are these characters?
Yeah.
Like, but in the end, I understand why they made the changes. It really streamlined the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it kept some of, there were iconic moments. Like, there's a moment where she's in a parachute, like, going down through the trees. And I remember, like, oh, I died so many times during the game playing this part. Like, I got impaled so many times by these trees.
Yeah.
And it's in the movie. And, like, it ends her, like, in the classic braid. Like,
oh, cool.
Getting her two guns, just like the game ends with her finally getting the two guns. Yeah. And it's,
such a cool moment in that first one.
And you see her see the axe the first moment, and you're like, oh, there it is.
The pickaxe.
I really
that's cool. Yeah.
A lot of people didn't.
I don't know what people were expecting. Like, translating a game to a movie, I think, is really, really hard to do. And I heard it was actually really passable. It was really good, so maybe I'll watch it on the plane.
There you go.
Maybe.
It's,
good stuff. So this was episode 319 of the Rated NA podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back all weekend long with new episodes with stuff about things that we've been playing, maybe some interviews. We don't really know yet.
We'll find out.
Play it by ear. We'll see.
That we eat, parties that we go to.
Yeah. We might go to parties, right?
Yeah.
You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, nerds@nerdappropriate.com. You can go to Facebook, /NerdAppropriate, and we have Mixer and Twitch TV that we do not use.
What about Dave?
Yeah, Dave, plug yourself, please. Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Dayan Hutton, and then I'm on Twitch at Dayabraham_Lincoln, as well as Instagram at Dayabraham_Lincoln. Those are the main ones.
Cool. Awesome. Right. You might be back too since
you're
stuck here.
Guest host all weekend long.
You're like, I'm trying to sleep. Well, no, we're recording.
Yeah. Right. Amazing.
All right. We'll catch you guys later. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you're welcome to just kind of hang out and have fun with us.
I was just going to get
ready to go. We're almost done. We're at the very end. So you can guest for like 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome. How was your first Max?
We'll cut that in post. It's okay.